good evening. Welcome to KRBD's Politics Now with your host, Bob Weinstein, former mayor of the city of Ketchikan, Democrat, and Kyle Johansson, former representative, Republican.
Good evening, Deb. Good evening, Kyle.
Conservative.
Good evening, Bob.
And this is a call-in show, yes. So we encourage you, if you're out there listening, to give us a call and join in the conversation. It's also, we decided we would invite people to tweet to us, so we have big monitor up, and if they want to send in a question this way. So let's see, you can tweet us at KRBD Radio, and hashtag politics now.
Yep, hashtag politics.
Oh, great.
Now.
That's
yeah,
great.
Nice. Very cool. Yep.
Okay, and the numbers to call are 225-9655 if you're in Ketchikan or Saxman or Metlakatla. And Stuart is going to answer the phone, and everybody's pointing their fingers at Stuart.
Yeah, I want to ask Stuart a question.
Uh-oh.
So theoretically, Stuart's an old hand at the radio here.
Yes.
Theoretically, I could tweet here from my phone, and it could put a message on there for Bob while he's talking.
That's true.
Awesome.
And it looks like we already have someone who has tweeted for us.
Oh, this is going to be a little moment. Okay. So let me finish with the phone numbers before we get on to the tweeting. And if you're listening on Prince of Wales Island or somewhere else in the state, you're streaming our signal. The number is 1-800-557-5723. And if you're listening from out of state, 1-907-225-9655. Two rules, no profanity and no name calling. And the opinions and views expressed on this show this evening are not the views and opinions of the KRBD staff, their board of directors, and most of the KRBD membership. Bob's rattling papers.
They're strictly our own opinions.
That's correct.
And you can agree or you can disagree. That's but right. Let's hear from you tonight. And Kyle, why don't we get into it? I think one of the things we'd like to talk about tonight are the local races, since filing has closed for the borough assembly, city council, and school board. So, Kyle, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm really excited about it. We have 12 open seats. 25 or 26, I read on the website this morning or heard it on the radio on KRBD. It's amazing, and the competition, I think, is great. I mean, don't you think?
Yes, it is amazing, and it's really good to see that for every seat there's not only competition, but that we have, you know, some fresh blood running, like Felix Wong, the last filer for the borough assembly. We have some new faces. We have some old faces. We have some very old faces and a good mix of people running.
Okay. Yeah. I want to go through each race. And I'm going to throw the candidates out there. And I'm curious as to what you think, because a lot of them are people we're familiar with. And then some people I don't know anything about. So
right.
I'm just going to throw them out there. This will be part of our rapid fire practice.
Okay. Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly. Now, there's 2 3-year seats open, 9 candidates. It's amazing. Have you ever seen that before? I haven't seen, I don't think, 9 for 2 seats.
Not in a while. And usually when you have that many people running for office, it means one of two things. Either people have been, you know, thinking about it and finally jump in, or my view is people are concerned about
a lot of different issues.
The borough, or they're concerned about the city, or they're concerned about the school board. Lots of issues, lots of things that we can talk about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so for the borough assembly, 2 3-year seats open. We have Sheen Davis, Trevor Shaw. Now, Trevor on the school board now, giving up his school board seat. That all connects.
I'm not sure he is. I don't know if his seat's up or if he's just running for something else and still has something, but.
Well, he's on the school board.
Yes, he's on the. That's I thought you said he's giving it up.
No. He's on the school board.
Right.
I think his term ends. I'm not sure. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know.
But, okay, so he's. Stephen Bradford was elected before to the school board, and now he's running for the borough assembly. So we have two. Those people have experience. Gabe Duckworth, he grew up here. I don't think he's ever been in office. I don't think he's ever run before. But he's a young guy. He's in his 30s. A lot of young faces, which I think is really nice, really cool. You know Gabe, don't you?
I know who he is, but I can't say I know him.
Yeah, a big family around here. Kim Hodney. I don't know Kim at all. I don't know. It's just a name. I have no idea if she's run before. Have you heard of
him? I think it's a guy.
Him? Okay, Kim.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't
Kim,
know him.
Kim, sorry. Jim Shank. Now, Jim grew up around here. Shank family's been around here for a long time. His parents owned, was it Shank Electric? That's before your time.
Yeah, could be, yep.
Yeah, I think that's
In fact, I think he's a retired electrician himself.
Yeah, 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 for sure. So he's a person people know around town. Susan Pickrell was on the school board. She's running for borough assembly now. So that's a familiar name. She's been in public office before. Jason Mitchell, I don't know anything about Jason Mitchell. I don't either.
Before.
And then
yeah.
Felix Wong, you mentioned Felix Wong. Yeah. He hasn't run for anything either.
No, but I think he's fairly well known for a couple of reasons. He's a young guy, works at the shipyard. He's a marine electrician. And he's also a photographer. And
now, that might be the reason, because for the first three things you said, nobody's going to know.
Right. So there was just that exhibit.
He's an amazing
down at the Discovery Center. Amazing photographer.
He is
very
really
smart, creative. And
are you running this campaign? It sounds like you're endorsing Mr. Wong the way you're talking
about him. Not decided to endorse anybody yet, but I know him a little bit.
Okay.
And I think he's a very good guy. And
because you brought up his name twice now.
Well, because he was the last one to
should
file.
Should I say everybody else? His name one more time.
Yeah, just he was the last one to file. If you want to say Stephen Bradford again, you can do
Sheen
that.
Sheen Davis, Trevor Shaw, Stephen Bradford, Gabe Duckworth, Kim Hodney, Jim Shank, Sue Pickrell, and Jason Mitchell. And then that guy you mentioned twice. All right. Before you can say his name again, let's go to school board.
Okay.
Because those are the two area-wide ones. Yeah. So there are three seats, five people running. Conan Steele, who is currently on there, and he was appointed, right? Do you know Conan?
I believe so. I don't know him. No.
Yeah, but he was that guy that was appointed when someone left the school board. I can't remember. Come on, Bob.
Scanlon.
Who was it?
Colleen Scanlon.
Oh, Colleen Scanlon retired, resigned her
seat.
So
he's put his name in, and he's familiar, obviously, with current things
exactly.
at the school board and
Matt
school district.
Matt Tibbles. I'm not sure about Matt Tibbles.
I don't know him.
Misty Archibald served before a full term and then didn't run and is now running again, so she has experience.
Right.
Matt Eisenhower, I have no idea.
I know him, and he works for the hospital. I believe he's currently head of the Ketchikan Hospital Foundation, young, active in the community, and pretty good guy. Not to speak ill of any of the top three who I really don't know, meaning the first three that you mentioned.
Right. Careful, because we're keeping track of how many times you say their names. And then
Alma
Manabat Parker, who grew up here, and another young face and someone who hasn't run before.
And I know her because I go to Studio Max. She and her husband operate that. So she's a small business person, among other things. Very nice.
Yep.
And, you know, it's going to be if the other three who I don't know are of the same caliber as the two that I know, I think people will have some really good choices for school board. And
the borough. And now if you look at these lists, I'd say half of them are under 40.
And I think that's good.
Don't you think?
Well, again, not knowing some of them, there's certainly young people running for both school board
and for the assembly.
And assembly, and I think that's great.
Generally, the school board attracts the younger candidates, but now we're getting some on the assembly. And different perspective. Even if people don't win, it will bring up issues that old people like you aren't familiar with.
Right. I agree with you. I think retreads like myself,
I'm
about whether or not they want to be
stuck in the middle.
Yeah, right.
You're
a different
generation.
I understand that, but I think it's good that some young people are stepping up and they're showing interest in the community.
It's
think that I think that will come out in the campaign. That I think I'm hoping that people who vote will pay attention, and instead of just electing the same people because they've heard the name, listen to all the candidates and make a conscious decision as to who will best represent the entire community, whether you borough, whether you're inside or outside of the city. Everybody's in the borough. Everybody's concerned about jobs, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And be interesting to hear what people have to say.
Like you said, there's a lot of issues out there.
Yeah.
A lot of big issues.
Let's go
okay.
to the city.
City of Ketchikan mayor, you've got Lou Williams III. And isn't it nice, I hate to be critical, but, you know, it's the Ketchikan Daily News. I mean, it's kind of natural for a guy like me. They misspelled their own owner's name.
You're kidding.
L-E-W. Is that right?
Or yes.
Is
it L-E-W?
I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Lou Williams III. And
yeah, but I have to say, and I'm sure this is a coincidence, when the day after Lou filed, there was a fairly large multi-column article when the other guy filed, Ed Plute,
you're right.
It was part of a smaller left side Olay, smaller print. I'm sure that was coincidental, but I noticed it.
We all appreciate the newspaper very much, and I'm sure they're partners with KRBD. But like you said at the beginning, the views of the people on the air are not necessarily the views of the station. And there's,
I am shaking my head vigorously.
Yes, yes, indeed. No, we appreciate the.
And we do too. I was just trying to be funny in my own way.
Well,
I've known Lou. He's been a good council member, good mayor. I worked with him for many years.
A lot of public service and a fairly decent baseball coach in the old days. Yeah. And I must point out, as I do usually when we talk about these entities, owner of a private money-making business.
Right.
The Ketchikan Daily News is a private for-profit organization.
And as we know, it's a tough
like
business.
All papers.
Tough business
tough
to be
business.
In nationally, and,
yeah.
And they've made a success of it. And, you know, what I'll say about Lou, when I got on the council my first term in 1991, we got into budget right away, and I still remember Lou coming up to me and saying, "Boy, you're more fiscally conservative than I am. I had no idea. I thought you were this big spending liberal kind of guy." But anyway, he and I got along good for many years.
Well, I mean, to be fair, you guys, your battleground was left of center, the both of you. I mean, you guys were fighting over there to see who wasn't more liberal. You were nowhere near the conservative side of the pendulum.
Hey, Lou listens to, you know, Rush Limbaugh and reads Drudge Report. So, you know, he's out there somewhere.
Just to see what the other side is up to, I'm sure. All right.
So keep going.
Let's go and
Ed Plote, who ran against me, is running for mayor this year.
And he's run against Lou before, too.
No, he ran for council, I believe, last year. And he's running against Lou for mayor, and, you know. He'll do, you know, let's make a prediction. What percent of the vote do you think Ed Plute will get?
No, I'm not going to make any predictions.
Okay.
I appreciate that he runs and he speaks articulately about the issues. He does. He really cares about the issues.
I think he'll get more votes than you might predict, just based on my own record of him running against me.
Okay. See, this is the fun part about this. This is the fun part about the show.
Okay, keep going.
All right, City Council, we're back in Bob's old backyard. Now, this is an interesting one, and I think we're going to have to take up a couple segments on this because we still have City Council Saxman to go. And I think this is an important one because this one's kind of interesting to me. Ketchikan City Council, 2 3-year seats are open, and you've got 4 people running. We'll go from the bottom up. Jan Lee Gage, she graduated with me, so she's definitely a young person. Class of 85. And she's never run before. And she originally filed for the 1-year seat and then changed it to the 3-year seat. So that's a little bit of a change. But she's running. Spencer Strasburg. I don't know Spencer Strasburg.
I don't know him. No. He's a local business guy. I think Fence and maybe the Foxhole or something.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know him personally.
Okay. So City Council, business owner. And then Sam Bergeron, who has now Sam sat on the Borough Assembly before and I think on the City Council.
He was on the council and he quit because his employment took him south once or twice.
Did you say the P word? Quit?
The
Palin word?
He left the community for work, and he did.
You can't say quit.
Okay, he resigned his position.
He resigned his position.
But he's been active in the community, and he was on the KIC board or council for a while.
But he was on the assembly, too, right?
I believe so.
I thought he was, okay. So you got Sam Bergeron, and then Bob Sievertson, who sits on the city council now, and this is the one that I'm curious to hear what you think about it. Now, he is, from what I've heard, publicly announced he's running for state house. And I think he's signed up on the APOC website. He can raise money to run for the state house against Dan Ortiz. And he's currently a city council member. And now he's going to run for city council again. And then if he gets on the city council, then he's immediately going to be running for state house again. And then going to have to, if he wins, he's going to have to resign his city seat. And then the city council, would they appoint somebody, or is that an election?
They would appoint until the next election. So it would be basically an appointment for a year, because the election's in November. There'd be a resignation between then and January, and then until following October, there'd be an appointment.
Okay. So structurally and legally, there's obviously nothing wrong with this. He's certainly entitled to do all of this.
It sounds like you have a concern. What's your concern with that?
I don't have a concern. I'm wondering what your opinion is. It's basically running from a safe seat, and in some instances, it's forbidden, and in some instances, it's allowed. And then, I'm just curious.
Well, about running for two seats at the same time. Yeah.
Basically.
Well, I think that's odd. I think Bob Sievertson made a mistake by announcing, it was in the paper when he filed for city council, that he was also going to run for state legislature.
Right.
And so I think I'm hearing what your concern is, and you know, a couple of things pop into my head now that you're asking that. One is, make up your mind. You want to be a council member, then be a council member.
That's kind of what I'm
thinking.
You want
to run for state house, then run for state house.
But
to say, well, I'm going to do this, but I'm also telling you that I don't intend to serve out my term. I intend to go do something else if I'm successful. But the other thing that comes to mind is he'll be running for state house to represent all of Ketchikan, Wrangell, Metlakatla, and so on. So there are some issues that come up in city government where you decide what's best for city residents, not the entire legislative district. So what comes to my mind is, will he be willing to make some tough decisions that piss non-City of Ketchikan residents off because they have a different opinion? And or will it just be milquetoast, you know,
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, no criticism here. I just think the timing was off. I just think it was, like you said, a misstep in timing. But maybe it's a strategy that he thought about and might be a good thing. Not to judge what he's doing,
but it seems odd. I'm being straightforward. I'm telling you what my plans are. But the fact is, the filing's not till next. The deadline for filing for legislative seats not till next June.
Yeah.
Seems
June 30th.
You know, if I were doing what he was doing, I probably would have waited until the spring to do that, you know, get reelected, if that's what you're trying to do.
It's a little bit confusing, I would think, and I'm not sure, you know, I mean, I think there's going to be some explaining, as Desi Arnaz would say. There's going to be a little splaining to do about what exactly, like you said, what are the priorities going to be. But that's a cross or a burden that he's going to have to bear, and the voters are going to decide. So, I mean, that's the fairness of it.
Right. On one hand, it's not unusual for somebody in elected office to run for a different or higher office, but usually they don't announce both at the same time, and they're, as you
said, in some instances, it's forbidden. It's running from a safe seat. Like, I don't believe you can run. What was it that was? It was in Alaska. I can't remember what it was. I think you have to resign your legislative seat if you run for federal office, or I don't remember what it is. But it comes up in different states. All right, so we got that. 1 year seat open. George Librand, familiar name.
Yep.
I mean, come on.
Yep.
He's 99.
And he's been on both the borough assembly, city council. I served with him.
Right.
He was on the council when I was there.
Okay, so George has been around. Everybody knows that. Julie Isom, who might be new to Ketchikan folks, but she was mayor of Thorne Bay and sat on their council for quite a while.
And she worked for Senator Stedman for a number of years, so I think she's pretty well known in the community.
Yeah, she worked for Senator Stedman. And then 1 year seat, the final one, three people for this one, is Chuck Slagle.
Yep, and again, Chuck's been around the community for a long time, knows a lot of
people. Charles F. Slagle, as it says.
Charles, yeah. I will not call him Charles, probably, but
me neither.
He's been active in the community and well known. So that will be an interesting race. You have three people who are well known,
Okay. And then through Saxon City Council, Sylvia Bainey. I don't know who Sylvia is. I think I may have met her, but I don't know her off the top of my head. Frank Saluto, Richard Shields, and Charles Denny. Now, Richard and Charles have been on the council for quite a long time, and I think Frank was been on there for a term. I'm not really sure.
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. Yeah.
And then they have a one-year seat, Gabriella Daniels. I'm not familiar with her. Nora DeWitt, who's been active in Saxman out there for many, many years. And Harvey Shields as well.
Harvey's been active for a long time.
So some familiar names. So it seems like across the board we've got a lot of people we're familiar with, a lot of new people, and a lot of young faces, which I think is really
cool. And I think that's the bottom line. People are interested in these races. There's going to be competition with that many people running, and it's great.
Well, we've got a caller out, I think.
Yeah, go ahead. And then you.
You got some.
Caller, you're on the air.
Great, thank you. I'd like to talk about the gasoline and diesel prices here in Ketchikan. I talked to a local operator that he looked up his historical records, and he told me that in 2004 that the price of crude was $41 a barrel, and yet gasoline was $2.19. So now, today, the price of crude is under $40, and we're paying close to $3.50, $3.47, $3.50, and diesel. So it's hurting everyone, not just the gasoline, but the contractors, and the people who are looking for home heating oil. I guess my question to both of you is, what if any role do you think that government should play in looking at some of these exorbitant prices? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Wayne. Appreciate it. I can tell you in my experience, this issue came up quite a bit. And over 6 years that I was in office, the Attorney General's office did, I think, two studies under different administrations. And I believe that, I think it was the Senate paid for, I think it was Wilikowski.
I think Bill Wilikowski did a study done. Yep.
On if there's any price fixing or if there's any collusion or if there's any reason particularly. And in all three instances, I think the general consensus was there was not anything but supply and demand. And, I mean, here, you know, it comes up on a barge and they buy on the spot. And I'm sure those guys can tinker with their inventory a little bit, but I don't think it's they didn't find anything out of the ordinary. That's what the reports came back from, three separate reports that I saw, a couple from the Attorney General's office. So, I mean, I know it's frustrating. I pay the same price as you do, but that's all the information that I've got. I know they've talked about doing it again, but haven't seen a study lately.
Right, and I think some of the local supplier said what Kyle did, that their materials come up on a barge. That's the price we get. If oil is going down nationally, which it is, the price of oil, the next barge or some other, when they get another supply, it will go down. So what they say, somebody would have to track this, over time, prices will go down. And then when it reverses, it will creep back up. The question is, does it go down as fast as it creeps up? And who knows?
Right. And then the other factors. I mean, to be fair, comparing strict dollars per barrel versus price of gas is very oversimplified. The variables in delivery, in refining, in all of those things are so broad and varied that a straight up comparison like that I don't think really holds water.
Right.
Sorry. Well, anyway, no offense, Wayne. I mean, I know what you're saying. I don't mean to say your math sucks, but it doesn't work.
Right. Anyway, great question. Why don't we move on to another subject?
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
And why don't we talk about the legislature's lawsuit against Governor Bill Walker for making an executive decision to expand Medicaid. Go ahead.
Tell us about it.
Go ahead, Kyle.
This one's yours.
Oh, this one's mine. Yeah. I thought it was yours.
No.
Well,
I wanted to do the local candidates. I'm fascinated with so many people running. It's awesome.
Right. Well, as we know, Governor Walker, after months of legislative inaction to have a vote on Medicaid expansion, leadership, I think, was cowardly in their actions. They refused to have an up or down vote on an issue that most Alaskans wanted to see implemented, according to poll data. So what they did, because they knew enough members of the Republican caucus would join Democrats and the independent. In fact, our two legislators, Senator Stedman and Dan Ortiz, have both said they support and would have voted if they had the chance for Medicaid expansion. Legislature refused to do that. The governor decided to do that. And last week, the legislature decided to spend initially almost $500,000, $450,000, hiring the same D.C. law firm that one of the partners is a guy named Viet Dinh, who in the Bush administration helped write the Patriot Act, including the invasions of privacy that I think many Alaskans, are, including members of our congressional delegation.
Are you sure he wrote that part?
Did the whole thing. But aside from that, they were involved in what we now know were unsuccessful lawsuits on behalf of states and others against Obamacare. So we hire a loser firm, if you will.
Jeez.
It wasn't an objective decision. It's a political.
What is their actual record, Bob? How many have they won? Do you
zero
know?
And two, or zero and one. I don't know if they were involved in both of them or not.
I think they've been in a lot of state cases. I think
anyway, they were not successful in their legal pleadings about Obamacare. But the point is, they sued, and the Speaker, Representative Chenault, Representative Millett, President of the Senate Meyer, and his sidekick John Coghill issued a press release in which they said, this has nothing to do with Medicaid expansion. It has everything to do with the separation of powers, and the governor shouldn't have done that. We should have. Of course, they had the chance, and they didn't. So they also forgot to mention, as they wrote that, I heard some laughter coming from up that way, and I thought I heard the sounds of what I think their noses grew at such an exponential and huge rate because they're lying. It has everything to do with Medicaid. And they should have just been straightforward and say they oppose it. They'll do everything, including spending millions of state funds on what I think will be a loser of a case.
Or halves of millions.
Now, today, the governor announced that an Alaska law firm with Alaskans has offered at no cost to defend the state of Alaska. So you have the legislature hiring Beltway attorneys, $500 an hour or more, and you have some Alaskans who will defend the people. So, Kyle, what's your take? I mean, do you think
dripping.
You were a legislator and I think we've talked about this, whether or not the governor had authority. Legislative counsel wrote that he did. So, how do you explain this lawsuit? Do you think it has anything to do with Medicaid? Do you think it's politically motivated?
Well, two things. I mean, first of all, whether you start off right away, whether you like it or not, it is a separation of powers question. However, could this have been brought up with a different issue? Here's an example that I know you'll like. The abortion language in the same budget that says cannot use this money for abortions is the same language that they used for you cannot use this money for Medicaid. It's the same language. It's the exact same language. So what happens with this language is going to have some effect on what happens with that language as far as whether it can be in a budget. So this could have been hung on the abortion language just as easily as that could have been hung on the Medicaid issue. See what I'm saying? So they did choose Medicaid issue because it's something that they want to kill. And this is their last strategic option is to go to court because the governor went ahead and made the call. And, You know, those legal opinions were floating around because Sean Parnell said no when expansion was put in front of him the first time.
Right. Sean Parnell was...
Right, and well, that's fine. Yep. That's his choice. Yep. But at the time, legal opinions were circulating around that said, hey, you can do this.
Right.
And he said, no, no, no.
Right. And he knew he could have.
And he knew he could have.
Right.
And then so we get to Governor Walker, who made it his number one, that and the gas line, Medicaid expansion and the gas line were his two big issues.
He campaigned on it. That's why people like me, in part, supported him, because he was going to do something that would benefit health care for thousands of Alaskans.
Right.
We have 100 million in the state going to uncompensated care. That the hospital association said Medicaid expansion will help.
But it's in the courts now, so we don't have to try and convince anybody because the judges, they don't listen to us anyway. Okay, just had to get that out of the way. So, yes, it is an issue of whether this can happen or that can happen, whether the governor has the power to do that. But, you know, it's the Medicaid deal, and it was the governor's big issue, and they wanna give him a loss.
Okay, so let me ask a couple questions. Number one, yes or no, do you think they would have done that? Do you think the legislature would have sued and wasted a couple $1 million if Governor Parnell had chosen to expand Medicaid?
Well, Governor Parnell never would.
No, but if he had, do you think they'd be suing?
If he had, they would have dropped over dead, probably.
Okay.
That's probably what would have happened.
Number two, we have an issue that I think most Alaskans care more about than stopping Medicaid expansion, and that's called the $3.5, maybe even $4 billion fiscal gap now. We have a gas line. Governor wants told us on the show a couple a month ago. Want to have a special session to talk about both those issues. They're both very critical issues. But I'll only call a special session if I know sort of in advance that the legislature will have an adult conversation about one or both. What does the lawsuit, in your opinion, bode for cooperation between the governor and that gang of legislators? Do you think it's going to help? They're working together on critical issues that I just listed?
Well, surprising or not, if the issue gets big enough, then they'll work together. I mean, this is not going to kill. These things, I mean, come on. You can hate each other over politics, over Medicaid. If tomorrow the golden gas line comes in and everybody has to get together and make concessions, you can compartmentalize these things. But generally, it's going to make everybody grumpy. So it's going to be harder to find those places. But, you know, you have to have faith that when the real tough decisions come, people are going to step up and compartmentalize that. That's my experience. But in the day-to-day stuff, yeah, it's gonna make people pissed off. And what it's really going to do is it's going to make the soldiers on each side. It's going to make the rank-and-file staffers on each side who really get into it. And I know this because I was a staffer and I was a legislator, and there's a different rhythm and tone to it. And when you're a staffer boy, you'll run through brick walls for your boss, and you get passionate. And those things cause other problems with other things. So, yeah, it's going to affect things, sure.
Right. And, you know, I hope you're right that they'll be big enough to work and compartmentalize. I predict that won't be the case, just given some of the players and the fact that they have not been straight with the public as to why they're suing. And, you know, that's... They're spending time on lawsuits and daylight saving time changes instead of budget. I mean, they left Juneau the first session, the regular session, with no budget.
Yeah, I mean, they have to deal with Medicaid, and you know, they have to deal with what the governor did.
Right.
I mean, and so it has to happen. They're going to deal with it.
Okay, Deb.
So we're going to take a break here. Okay. And then we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Don't go away. And be sure to call in and add your voice to this conversation.
225-9655.
Bob called them liars. The legislators. Did you hear that?
I did.
Yeah. It's on tape.
Shellfish farming in Alaska. The Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisories Program is sponsoring a comprehensive workshop from September 11th through the 13th at the University of Alaska Southeast Ketchikan Robertson Building from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. For more information, please contact Ray Rolland directly by email at ray.ralonde@alaska.edu or telephone at 907-952-1824.
Registration is going on now for Native Arts Studies program classes at the Totem Heritage Center. Experienced and knowledgeable instructors guide students in learning techniques and creating projects in Northwest Coast weaving, carving, and regalia. For the full Native Arts Studies program schedule, for more info and to register, call the Totem Heritage Center at 225-5900 or visit KetchikanMuseums.org.
Of all the money that e'er I had, I spent it in good company. And of all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit, to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all.
We are Scythian, and you're listening to KRBD Ketchikan.
And we're back, and we're tweeting tonight, or you can tweet your question to us. We actually have one up on the board. One of you want to read that question?
Joel Jackson, Alaskan at Alaska Jackson, Alaskan Jackson. Joel is an avid tweeter. Joel, I hope your feet get better. The borough suit regarding education funding, political folly or strategically sound? Bob, you're a former superintendent. You ran school districts. You're very familiar with budgets and such.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? And you know about the foundation formula, too.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. Well, number one, the borough finally found a legal hook. I have always disagreed with the lawsuit and with the legal theory because this is really not about a mandate. The local portion is mandated. It's a dedicated tax, and Judge Carey ruled that it was. So the borough had a legal point finally. But this is really, when I was still mayor, the borough manager who came from the local boundary commission had a personal belief, I guess, that there should be more mandatory boroughs, that regional education attendance areas which do not pay local taxes, that was unfair. And he did a lot of presentations about that and ultimately convinced the assembly to sue, and they came up with some grants. But 2 points. Mm-hmm. If you look at, I won't get into the details of the formula, but there's a basic need calculation, and cities and boroughs have to pay a 4 mil or 2.6 mil, whatever it is now, equivalent. So they do not get 100% of basic need. What I don't think is discussed in local government here is REAAs get a lot of what's called federal impact money because of all the federal property. The federal government pays in lieu of tax money because it's a federal land tax base. 90% of that is deducted from basic need for the regional school districts. So if you ranked school districts in terms of what percentage of 100% of basic need do they get, both borough and city and REA school districts are right in the mix. So that's one thing from a school funding point of view. But the other thing is, and the boroughs admitted this already, they know they can't make the legislature give them another dime, and they're certainly not going to get another dime in the middle of a $4.5 million or a 4.5 or whatever is billion-dollar deficit. The other thing is they already know, and some legislators have talked about it, they don't have to mandate it. They can just say, we're going to give X amount to school districts. Ketchikan Gateway Borough, City of Craig, whatever. If you wish, you have the option. You may voluntarily provide this other portion to make it 100%. And, you know, then it's no longer a mandate. It's a voluntary choice. But the bottom line is, and this has been in print, the borough has admitted that they cannot, I think in some of their briefings, actually, their pleadings, they said they know they can't force the legislature to give them 1 cent. So at the end of the day, it may be okay if the Supreme Court agrees with the borough, and we don't know if that will be the case, but they might. So you've made a point, but how much did you spend? You know, I bet it's upwards of $1 million of legal fees and staff time for the many years this has gone on. And if you're not going to get tax relief, what was the point other than to make a point because you're manager had this strong opinion that the system was unfair?
Well, I mean, as a taxpayer, my first question is, this is a statewide issue. There's lots of other municipalities out there that are in the same boat where they're required contribution. And my tax money is being spent to fight a statewide battle. I mean, why? That's my question. Why are we spending? Why is Ketchikan spending upwards of $1 million to fight this battle? When, I mean, I think we could use $1 million in the borough.
Right, maybe less than that. Maybe $300,000 or four. You know, I don't know what the tally's been in the staff time.
My question has always been, why are we the ones that are doing the fight? And it's because the people who are elected decided that we were going to be the ones that were going to take this. That would be like us going, you know what, I am sick and tired of the what they're doing up in Nome with the gold dredging, and I think we ought to start spending $500,000 to stop those people up there from doing this.
Right, and they, you know, they've even started using our tax statements as political statements, where it used to say the unfunded mandate, now it says the unconstitutionally whatever. I wonder if they would do that for other issues. You know, what if the city said we want the tax statement to say paid for by city instead of area wide? You know, I mean, there's lots of different things that could be on tax statements. It's very interesting to see. That's the first time in my 40 years here where I've seen that kind of stuff.
It is interesting to use a bill or a tax statement with a political statement. I mean, what if it said vote for Pedro on there?
Right. Well, the other thing is, if it's unconstitutional, I don't know if I want to pay it. You know, why would I want to pay something that the bill says if you pay your taxes, you're violating the Constitution? Maybe people should say, we don't want to pay. Don't pay.
So I think bottom line, I think, because that's probably what Joel's looking for. In the end game, if the Supreme Court says, Ketchikan, you're right, and tells the legislature, okay, now fund schools, and you know what the legislature does? Like you said, the legislature does whatever they want to do. Right. They are the appropriators, period.
Right.
So what you're doing is you're getting to a conclusion, and you're asking the same people that you just sued, basically, to pay for the money. And they're going to say, and here's the other thing. If the state is going to start paying for that, the more the state pays, and you know this as a former administrator, he who writes the checks gets the oversight.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So now what's going to happen? Do we even need to have a school board anymore? Do we need a local school board if the state's paying for everything? Hawaii has a central school board.
Right.
For the entire state. And when something goes wrong, you call Oahu. So are we going to be calling Anchorage to the state school board saying, hey, there's a book in Houtling that I don't agree with, and you can call some lady from Eagle River is going to be our representative? Right. I mean, these are things that this is true.
But anyway, at the end of the day, the court is not going to tell the legislature, here's what you have to do in terms of funding. They can either do what I mentioned earlier, they can cut the per student unit by whatever the increase is, and they can say REAs, we're not going to, because rural legislators who are part of the, the majority caucus are not going to let the REAs suffer and not get a dime out of some political settlement. So at the end of the day, they may say, we're not deducting PL 874 funds, so you can keep your federal money. And they, the REAs that this is lawsuit is, you know, in my view, targeted at, might come out more ahead while cities and boroughs have their funding cut.
This is exactly right. Now, take a breath.
Okay.
Because he's got he's trying. I wish we had video. Okay. Now, take a breath, and everybody out there listening, that whole thing that Bob was just talking about is the Bush, the rural legislators needing to be made whole. So if the Supreme Court says Ketchikan's right, and then the legislature's got to deal with it. So then the legislature's going to be there deciding on funding levels for school districts, and the rural legislators, like you said, are not going to let their schools, they're not going to step away from the table. But this year, why did the government shut down this year almost? Because they couldn't get enough votes to balance the budget. And in the future years, because of the way the finances are, every single year they're going to need, for the next couple of years, at least for the next 3 years, they're going to need three-quarter votes to get into that extra money. And they're going to have to deal with, and like you said, hey, if I'm on the outside and they need my three votes, oh, hey, you gave us $100 million for education last year, we want $150 or government's going to shut down. You're going to get into a pickle where you might have to, you might, we might be paying more for education after this if the Supreme Court rules.
It'll be known as the Ketchikan tax or something. But yeah, there's a lot of ways to skin the cat, and you know, we'll see what happens. Right now, it's in the Supreme Court. We'll see what how they rule, and then go on and see what the politicians do.
What a gruesome thing to say. This is humane society. You'd be ashamed of yourself. Skin a cat. There's more ways to peel a banana, maybe.
Okay.
Come on.
Peel a banana. Okay, we have a question from Mark Pecco. He wants to know, will any state legislators in Alaska face consequences in 2016 election for opposing Medicaid expansion? You know, the, Kyle, go ahead.
This is going to be a huge one, I think. Will it change anything? I doubt it. The makeup is so lopsided right now. But, I mean, it's going to shake some, rattle some trees. I bet some people lose on this issue, in the House anyway.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, most Alaskans support what the governor did. I think the polling data I saw suggested is, you know, almost 70% of Alaskans do that. That's why the four legislators to whom I referred as Pinocchios earlier tried to convince us that their lawsuit had nothing to do with Medicaid expansion because they know we support it.
Well, here's the problem. And like I said, you can argue that this is a separation of powers issue. You can argue that. That's fine. But is it the red face test? No, it doesn't pass the red face test. We all know that. But imagine explaining that to you, and you've knocked on doors with constituents. Try to explain that you're making a stand on Medicaid expansion over a constitutional issue of powers between the governor and the legislature. That just doesn't fly at the door.
Well,
it's going to be tough for people to answer
that. Right. And as I have said repeatedly, and I'll say it again tonight because you just gave me an opportunity, it's hard to see these people argue, well, we're doing this as a cost savings thing. We're concerned about state finances when some of them took per diem at the federal rate for living at home during the special session. Lisa McGuire, $5,000 for living in her own house. I mean, it's absurd. And I think that, there's other related legislative expenses that I think will be scrutinized in the near future. And,
liars, he told them.
You know, they'll be they'll be accountable.
Well, I think it's interesting. It'll be interesting to watch. And, yeah, I do think so, just to reiterate, to wrap up. I think it's going to have an effect on some races. Overall, I don't think it's going to change the direction too much. But, you know, the Senate is – I mean, they're a seat or two away from going back to a coalition, I think.
Well, you know. Hopefully they will. I mean, that would be great to see it's a possible. Coalition and some responsible legislators working with the governor who, you know, Sean Parnell was the only Republican incumbent in the United States who was defeated, probably because of his, in part, Medicaid, but more, you know, more so because of his failure to deal with the National Guard scandal in a appropriate, decisive manner.
I think more that he was asleep until about October 20th. Well,
but in any case, Bill Walker was elected by the people of Alaska, and as you said, one of his two issues, aside from gasoline, was expand Medicaid.
And
he did it, and I'm glad he did it.
Yeah, I mean, he said he was going to do it, and he did it. And the courts will decide ultimately. But, I mean, you look at the Supreme Court makeup. I don't know. I got my money on Walker.
Yeah, and hopefully the court will ask legislative leaders, separation of powers, so why didn't you vote on it? Because you guys could have voted it down.
They won't question.
No, they probably won't, but I question that. We could call in questions to the court. That's what I would call in.
All right.
So we only have about 8 minutes left, and I know there was an email that I sent to the two of you.
Yes.
From a gentleman in...
More than one.
Foreign Bay, perhaps.
He had a couple of questions. So do you have those with you? Or?
I mean, one of the questions was the mayor of Thorne Bay is elected by the council.
Yeah.
And number one, that is in the Thorne Bay Code. But number two, and maybe more importantly, it's in state statute. Thorne Bay, I believe, is a second-class city unless it's changed its status. By definition, a mayor is selected by the council, they can have a code where the voters select the mayor from the council, but it's a council member.
Was this illegal? He was asking whether
that was right or not, okay. I think. And Saxman does that as well.
I believe so.
A lot of small cities do that. The other thing he was talking about was that I remember it said that the Thorne Bay City Council members were saying that Ketchikan was on the loose to annex Prince of Wales. I really doubt that.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. I don't believe that's happening.
And I don't think the state would go for that. Like we said, there are very particular rules for boroughs, and Prince of Wales Island in itself is about a perfect borough.
Right, and he expressed or informed us they changed the name to – instead of it being Prince of Wales and Outer Ketchikan to Prince of Wales and Outer Hyder census because of the, you know, Ketchikan did annex some area, but not on Prince of Wales. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I agree with you, Kyle.
I think that's just some guy back in D.C. Naming census areas. They finally changed that one up in the middle of Alaska.
And his question is, City Council in Thorne Bay is trying to get Thorne Bay into the borough to prevent annexation. You know, I know there's a study that Prince of Wales Communities initiated. They brought some consultants in to look at the question of not annexation, but forming a borough. And I think it was more perhaps initiated not out of concerns that Ketchikan might annex them, because we agree that's not going to happen, more because the mines might be developed there, and like the Juneau borough has some taxation of Greens Creek. How do we tax?
And that's what's going to drive
tax an entity and, you know, provide some services.
And so, that's what's going to happen. I mean, that's what's going to drive it, basically. And eventually, I mean, Prince of Wales, you guys out there, eventually, you guys are going to be in a borough. I mean, eventually, you're going to be able to have those powers to tax. Right. The state's going to get out of the business. They can't afford it.
Right. So, Kyle, we have a couple more minutes. Why don't we just go through a couple quick issues? Our two senators said that they do not support the president's proposed agreement with regarding Iran. Right. Number one, does that surprise you? And number two, what's their plan, especially since like Britain just reopened its embassy in Tehran? Russia, China, France, and Germany have said they support it. So have you seen their proposed plan or what their reasons are for doing that?
No, I have not seen Senator Murkowski or Senator Sullivan's plan because I don't think there is a plan. I think the plan is to make it an issue for the Republicans politically. I think that's the plan. Frankly, I don't think you can really do much better. I mean, you're not going to stop Iran eventually from doing whatever they want, I don't think. And I think these are the steps that you have to take, the agreement. I really do. I mean, I think I would probably support it because you have to move forward in the process with relations. You can't just say no and then just stare at them with an evil look in your eye. It has to be a process because they're going to get anywhere they want to go. If they want to weaponize nuclear right. things, they will. It's going to happen. So work towards normalized relations.
Right.
It's the best you can do, don't you think?
I think so, especially when those other countries, China, Russia, Germany, France, and the UK, support it. Are we going to do something on our own? And, you know, just a quick response from me. Dick Cheney today said he's against it. That's enough for me. If he's against it, I think it must be good for the United States.
Wow.
You know, maybe they should have, you know, if he wants to go to war, he can jump off the first airplane and be on the first wave into Tehran and let the warmongers go ahead and do that.
I think he's against great white sharks devouring children, too. So does pretty that soon, mean that you're for that?
Pretty soon he'll say, oh, I made a mistake. It wasn't WMDs in Iraq. I meant Iran. That's where they really are. But, yeah, it's interesting. And as we know, Senator Sullivan wrote a letter with some other senators, not Senator Murkowski, to the supreme leader saying, you know, the president, don't trust our president. So, yeah, it's all politically motivated. And we know it. They know it. Joe Biden, in or out?
Joe Biden, I don't think he's running.
Okay.
He just wants to be relevant for a few more minutes.
Okay. Donald Trump.
Great speaker, by the way.
Donald Trump has continued to do great in the polls, Iowa, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. He threw Univision reporter, Hispanic network, out of his press conference
yesterday.
And
let him back in when he started behaving.
Let him back in. So Donald's doing okay, huh?
I think he's doing fantastic. I mean, I saw a video of him. He sold out some arena, outdoor place, 30,000 people. I don't know where it was. And as he flew into town in the 757, did you see him circle the arena?
I believe it was Mobile, Alabama.
Ah,
it wasn't quite 30. He may have had 20,000.
Was it 50?
The capacity was higher than. But the point is, it was a show. He showed up.
Flew his jet around in circles and drove everybody nuts.
Yeah. So a month ago, or maybe 6 weeks ago, our first show, when I brought up Donald Trump, you questioned viability. And I said, yeah, I think he's viable. And I started being flippant. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think? Do you think he's a viable candidate?
Not through next August, no.
Not through next. So you don't think he'll be on the ballot?
Mm-hmm. Oh, he'll be on the primary ballot, or he'll go third party if they give him enough gruff. But he'll definitely make a difference in the race, but he's not going to win the Republican primary.
Well, he's taken out Scott Walker, who's went from leading in Iowa to being 6%.
It's barely August.
Well, but, okay, we have another debate
12,
coming up.
12 months to go.
Okay.
Patience.
All right, so we're going to end here on Trump. And I want to thank everyone who called in or tweeted their
Thanks
questions.
Thanks for tweeting, guys.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Kyle. And we will be back. Little change in the schedule. We will be back September 16th.
Okay.
So that's not every other week right now. We're going to take a 2-week break.
Right. And then we'll do the 16th and the 30th. So we'll have, you know, the local elections October 6th.
Whatever yes.
That, so mm-hmm. We'll have two shows during the local election season, and I imagine we'll have some lively discussion of what's going on. And
any of our local candidates remind you of Donald Trump?
Any of our local candidates remind you of Donald Trump?
Well, we'll all have to think about that. Well, thank you all, guys. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Coming
up next,
Wednesday Night Blues.